Welcome to the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast, where we learn from real estate professionals across the industry. They will share about how they got into real estate, the big wins they have celebrated, the mistakes they have made along the way, and the advice they have for anyone following in their footsteps. Money really does grow on trees. Hey everybody, it's William Hollins here for another episode of the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast. I've got a guest today. He's an awesome guy. He's a local Texas guy, Sam Bates. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, William. I look forward to talking to you, and hopefully your listeners will get some insight and nuggets from our conversation.
Absolutely. I'm sure that they will, man. So I know you lived in Texas, you lived in California for a while. Can you share why you came back to Texas?
Born and raised, I liked LA for the bright lights, but wanted to get back to Texas, wanted to get back to family. I only lived there a couple of years. I didn't want to make a life there. At that time, housing prices were in 2005, 2006 were bad enough. Now it's astronomical. And also I lean more politically aligned with Texas than California. So there's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, understood. I got to go on vacation last year to California for the first time. So I had a lot of fun. We got to see the redwoods and just the coast. It was beautiful, but certainly glad to get back to Texas as well.
Yeah, it's a beautiful state, but I'd much rather live here.
Yeah, definitely. So I know we live pretty close by. So how did you kind of get into real estate? You studied finance in college. Where'd you go to college?
I went to A&M. So Aggie, I know you're an Aggie. I always wanted to go to A&M mainly because they had a great football team when I was six or seven and fell in love with them. But then I realized they had a good school and a good business school. So I studied finance, and that's what took me out to LA, working out in California, then came back to Texas for my master's, and, thought I was going to do financial advising and working in investment analysis, but the market crashed and it kind of took me to a different path. So then I got into tax consulting and worked in taxes for 10 to 12 years. But I was investing pretty much from the get-go after that in real estate as a limited partner. Then I owned single family. Then we moved into multifamily development and acquisition.
That's awesome. What type of projects are you developing right now and what locations?
We've owned assets in like five different states, but most of our developments are all DFW. I mean, we have the population growth and the demand that doesn't make sense to go a lot of other places. So we build in secondary and tertiary markets in DFW. We have three multifamily acquisition or developments under construction right now. We have a build to rent community where we're breaking ground, and then we're about to get, and this is outside DFW, but we've been working with a landowner for, I don't know, 6-8 months on a development in Tyler. So we'll be doing a multifamily development out there. Then we do a lot of land development around Fort Worth. And then we have, we build about 150, 200 single family homes in Parker, Johnson, Tarrant County. So primarily Fort Worth and west of Fort Worth.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what type of, are you guys syndicating those deals? You know, how are you getting the equity for that?
We've done all different structures. We've done syndications, we've done joint ventures. It was me and a couple of partners. We were funding some of the projects by ourselves. So it's kind of gravitated over the years. Now we have lines of credit where a lot of the single family projects we build, we'll just have lines of credit with banks. But from an apartment standpoint, they're pretty much all virtually syndications at this point.
Awesome. That's really cool. So you know, typically like the acquisitions, you know, the returns that we've seen over the last few years, you know, double your money in, you know, 3 to 5 years. What type of return metrics do you see? Let's just take, for instance, a multifamily development syndication. What's the timeline to get paid? What's the construction duration, and what type of returns are you guys projecting for investors?
The timeline honestly depends on, we always buy the land and take it through the zoning entitlement process. So if we bought it after it's entitled, it'd be a lot quicker. But depending on the city or the county, the jurisdiction you're working with will kind of depend on how quickly you can get through that process. But some deals we've been able to have up and start leasing in probably 24 months, maybe 18 months, some have been 36 months. So it just kind of depends on how quickly and how willing the different cities are working with us to get through the planning, zoning, and getting all the permits, putting all the architecture engineering together to actually go horizontal and then vertical.
That's awesome. Yeah, so you're talking about like a payback period of starting 3 years after the initial investment. What's your specific group strategy? Are you guys, holding these properties long term? Are you leasing them up and then hoping to resell?
We've done both. Ideally, we're gonna build, lease up, refinance, return all the capital, and then just hold it for 5, 10 years. One of the projects we sold after lease up just because the numbers made phenomenal sense.
Yeah.
But to ask your question, I kind of forgot to answer it. The return metrics on acquisitions, I mean, we'll usually 15 IRR, 7 or 8 cash on cash, and then underwriting on development, we're usually at 20 to 23 IRR and a little bit higher cash. But we've always been able to perform significantly better than that. I'm not going to say that was us. That's part of the market, part of just a lot of different things and timing, and then having the luck, desire, fortitude, whatever you want to call it, to actually execute on the projects.
Yeah, that's awesome. So my background, I don't think we talked about it too much, but it's in big general construction management. So I learned a lot about just handling subcontractors and being able to talk to not only the workers that are doing everything and selling the materials, but also their managers and executives with other companies. So I love development, and I think that's really awesome what you guys are doing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I never thought I'd be in development, honestly, but it was, I won't say we were pigeonholed into it, but when I started looking at acquisitions initially, I was in my 20s and nobody took us seriously. And we had never bought anything outside of a single family home. And after kind of going through the best and final back in 2000, I don't know, 2010, 2014, somewhere around there, and getting beat down, we decided to start developing instead.
That's cool. So tell me, what's the obstacles in the development space? Have you guys experienced trouble rezoning? What type of just problems that have you guys experienced in that?
We haven't had any issues rezoning, but it's drug out significantly longer than maybe we expected. Or like we bought 200 acres of land and we did a 95 unit home development, and
Awesome.
we sold the lots anywhere from 1 to 11 acres. But in order to get the utilities, we had to go through each landowner's property. Well, one of the landowners wanted us to pay him $250,000 to run utilities through it, and of course you don't pro forma that out, and we had to get the utilities there, but the financials still made sense. And then one project we were getting going through the zoning process in a city, and one of the pipelines in the city busted, and they took all the engineers at the city and put it on that for 6 months. So our project completely came to a halt. During COVID, you had a lot of different delays. I won't speculate on some of them, but it was just some of the delays were we had never seen before. So there's a lot of different things that can happen in development, and I won't say it's more risky than acquisitions, but there's just more moving pieces, and you need to have a team to be able to execute and pivot and move forward in another direction.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Passive investors in real estate are able to receive a check every month. Some people call that mailbox money. We say money really does grow on trees. Visit the website at biggerpictureholdings.com, where we have a ton of free resources to help you learn more about planting your very own money tree.
So one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is how the top 1% invest. So I'd love to hear your insights on that, and so what are some of the strategies that they utilize that you're trying to implement as well?
Yeah, luckily I've been around some wealthy people in my career. When I was at UBS, we were the highest amount of money concentration in an area was in that location, and it was the most profitable location in the entire country. And so I started learning how they were investing there, and then just reading and talking, and then coming to Dallas. There's a lot of money in Dallas, and most people invest in businesses or private placements, such as syndications, and they don't invest in the stock market. They'll invest some, but they don't want their money to be correlated to something that they don't have control over. So investing in real estate, investing in a business where they can actually control it, they can determine when they buy it, sell it, how it operates. That's where most of them put their money, and that's how you gain. I mean, real estate has created more wealth or more millionaires throughout the history of this country than any other asset class. And most wealthy people have at least a portion of their portfolio in real estate.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just got off of a raise, and I had conversations with lots of different people, and it's like I think that real estate is a great opportunity, and I wish that everybody could get exposure to it. I know it just financially doesn't make sense for everybody, but and there's also great other opportunities to invest, but I think it makes sense to have a little bit of your net worth in real estate in some form or fashion.
Yeah, definitely. And I started investing in the stock market when I was 16, and I kept it in the stock market really until I was investing in real estate, and more of my portfolio became real estate. But after COVID and how the valuations skyrocketed when I knew they should be going down after poor performance numbers in Q2 of 2020, I just kind of pulled out completely because I didn't know what the trillions of dollars the Fed had printed, and then the other countries, how that was going to impact the stock market. And I still don't know why the stock market's reacted the way it has the last couple of years. So,
Yeah, that's got a heartbeat of its own for sure.
yeah, it does.
So, speaking of business, you mentioned business a little bit. So you've done a lot of real estate things, but you also have, you're trying to become more integrated. What are some of the other business endeavors that you are working on right now and stuff that you're looking to do in the future?
Well, right now we have five companies or six companies, and we have a single family development business, a multifamily development business, multifamily acquisition, a general contracting, and then we're an investor in a title company. So that takes up a lot of time, but I'm trying to, and we have a dirt work company, sorry. And then I'm looking at businesses we could add on. Like I'm right now looking at a general contracting company in Dallas to potentially acquire,
Okay.
because they focus on remodeling all over North Dallas, Collin County, and they have about 50 employees. We have 50 employees, but we're in completely different areas of DFW, and I think we could integrate really well. And then I've looked at spray foam companies, windows, doors, sidings. We already import a lot of, we don't really consider a business, but we import a lot of materials from Asia that we use in
Okay.
our products. So I'm looking at possibly getting into the different hardware businesses of a house that we could maybe cut out a supplier or just create better margins for the investment side of the business.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's super wise. You know, all the big multifamily groups, they are vertically integrated. You know, they've got property management, they've got construction management, you know, asset management. So that's pretty exciting stuff. I can't wait to see where that takes y'all.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever do property management. It just seems like it's a very hands-on business for little return, but maybe if we get enough units in one particular area, it makes sense. But we've owned over 1,000 units, but it's kind of been spread out. And now with us building almost primarily DFW, maybe we'll look into it. But at this point, it doesn't seem like the juice is worth the squeeze.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Man, I've really enjoyed getting to have you on today. Just got a couple more questions for you before we wrap up. So what's some of the lessons that you've learned on this journey so far that you can share with our listeners today?
I feel like I could pontificate for hours, but I think one of the best lessons I've learned is trust but verify. And in real estate, you're using a lot of different vendors, you're using subcontractors, you're property managers, and different people will give you recommendations of who's good or they've done a great job here. And early on, I would just take those recommendations or references and hire them. And a lot of times it didn't turn out to be what they promised or that their work product wasn't what it should have been. So you always want to go in and take them for their word, but make sure they can do the job before you hand over the keys to whatever piece of that job they're working. Because I've just seen repeatedly, especially with contractors, that they overpromise and underdeliver.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the biggest lesson.
Yeah, I completely agree. I experienced that multiple times. You know, like, give it to me in writing, show me pictures, and then I'm also going to go check for myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the last question for you, Sam. What is your proudest accomplishment so far? And you can have multiple. That's okay, too.
I think maybe it's more holistic, but I'm proud of what we've been able to create and the communities that we get to impact, the residents we get to impact, unfortunately, we have to pay it, but even the property tax dollars we give to cities to help them improve the landscape of the cities, the investors that have invested with us. Yes, we do have some very high net worth individuals, but we also have some sophisticated investors where our cash distribution, our refinance proceeds or sale proceeds have helped them significantly with retirement or college education for their kids or certain things like that. So I think it's just been able to help various people in different ways to meet their goal. Like one of the projects we have is 300 acre development where we're building single family, build to rent, and an apartment complex. And the town itself is 5,000 or 6,000. And with the amount of units that we're building, we could significantly impact that city and the tax base and hopefully get to steward it in the way we would like to see the city grow.
Yeah, I love that, man. That's so cool. Last question. How can people get in contact with you?
You can reach out to me. It's Sam, or just my website's probably the easiest. basecapitalgroup.com. I'm on social media, but I don't always respond, but definitely through the website's the best way.
Yes, sir. Awesome, guys. Go check them out. Sam Bates, everybody. Thank you so much.
Like and subscribe below. A new episode will air every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Are you looking for more content? Visit our website, biggerpictureholdings.com. And remember, money really does grow on trees.